Storytelling and ancient dance from the islands of Hawaii. And most especially, I'd like to say a fond aloha to some people that I have known for several years. These are the Winnikins. It's been a long time since I've seen them.
Really,
and it's been just exciting to see the two little kids that we worked with in our Montessori preschool who are now out of high school and one completing high school. So needless to say, I feel relatively young next to them. Part of this time with you is to come and share with you who we are as far as being the people of Hawaii. And just to tell you a little bit about the background of some of the things you will hear. I was fortunate to be raised by a grandmother who was pure Hawaiian. And I am one of 15 children. I am the 12th child in my own family. And as it would have happened to me, while I was growing up, I didn't have the chance of interacting with them. I was an only child with my grandmother. And because of that, a lot of things that she gave to me, she did so in my daily life. So I would like at this time to share with you some of the things that make up the storytelling that come from this land called Hawaii. And we who speak about the breath of life, the ones who hold it very dear to ourselves, many of you refer to us as Hawaiian, only because of the lands called Hawaii. But for us who are from the land, we are known as Maoli. Maoli simply means one original of the land. In the days of my grandmother, the stories she would tell me was always about life on the land of Hawaii. And in her storytelling, I had to sit and listen to hear about these tales of gods and goddesses that lived with my people. And they were also tales that said, we who were men and women were called to be just like gods and goddesses, the best that they're called to be. And with that in mind, I unfold for you a story that tells about the creation of life for we, the people of Hawaii. The story begins with Papa, Earth Mother, and Wakea, Sky Father. The two have come together, exchanging the understanding of love. And from their union becomes the islands we call Hawaiki. It begins with the land to the farthest north, an area called Kauai. Heinani no Kauai, or beauty, captured there in the sands of the island Kauai. And in this story, it tells about the two becoming one. And every time this union was started, the end would be the completion of the birth of a new island. Ni'ihau, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, Lanai, Kaho'olawe, Maui, and the last that is still growing, Hawaii. For here in the cliffs of Hawaii sit the goddess born of the union of Wakea and Haumea. Ah, the goddess Papa, soon left to the side only to be replaced by a new person, Haumea. The child Pele begins to learn that she is able to conjure up fire. And as a little child, it's her play toy. And she has not learned the gift of the fire, nor the destruction of the fire. And in the story of Pele, it tells of her leaving the lands of Mai Kahiki Mai because she has come to be an instigator of trouble. Trouble that she takes on herself by simply taking her sister's bow and proclaiming him as her bow. Unfortunately, her sister was a lot older than she, and her sister's name was translated as the Woman of the Sea. And thus, two sisters begin a fierce battle. The ocean constantly trying to cover up this burning fire, until one day, the ocean succeeds in moving her out of the lands of Tahiti. And in her journey, she goes to the northern islands. And the first island that she reaches, she takes her spearing stick, digs into the ground, and goes as far down as she can, and suddenly she hits water. Wherever the water sits, she cannot live. She goes from island to island with the hopes of making it her home. And the last island she goes to is Maui. And she goes into the domain of Haleakala, the house of the sun. And there, Pele burrows down deep with her o'o, or spearing stick. Upon reaching the bottom, it is solid. Her sister, on the other hand, decides, I shall find her hiding place, seek her out, and do battle with her. And when it is completed, it is I, the Woman of the Sea, who will take her life. And the battle begins. The two sisters go into a raging fight, water constantly covering over this fire, the spewing lava, till finally the lava can burn no more. Pele is proclaimed dead by her sister. The Woman of the Sea stands forth and says, it is I who is victorious. Night comes. The dawn appears so rapidly because in the top of the mount, Mauna Loa, at the break of day, the spewing lava comes forth, and it is Pele, no longer the mortal, but the immortal. The story is told, for there is Pele at the highlights of Mauna Loa. Spewing this lava on the lands that she covers of Kula. This beauty that I behold that barrels down, for there is Pele. And there at the heights of Kapalima, of Maui, the battle that first began. And it is there that the Woman of the Sea has tried to take the life of the goddess Pele. For where did she go? To the channels of Alinuihaha, to the island of Hawaii. And the story is told of Pele, the goddess. That storytelling of the battle between the two sisters has never been completed. It continues to go on to this day. This skirt, we call it tea leaf, spelt T-I and not T-E-A. The Hawaiian name for it is la'i, so it's much easier for you to learn tea than it is la'i. We tell you about these things that grow on our islands The leaf is found in almost all the South Pacific islands. And for us of Hawaii, the storytelling of creation and how this goddess Pele became present to us has been passed down through an oral tradition. Not a written one, not one that's been documented in writing, but purely through telling the legends and the stories. Some people have asked me, well, what do they signify? They signify a whole mess of things that go on in the life of a people that have been isolated for many, many generations. And that the idea of being isolated also keeps us in tune with knowing that some of these things are beginning to change. They are beginning to change because other cultures, other people have come into the land. And with those things in mind, I have come to share with you the things that I know belong to my people. The things that speak about land of Hawaii. And Hawaii, if you take the name apart, for Hawaiians, ha means to be the breath of life. And that breath of life is caught not just in how we do things with each other, but how we feel while we are doing them. Ha also speaks about the breath of life that is always there for you, not just through the good things, but even the horrible things. And sometimes the not too great things that happen between friends, lovers, and even relationships, that ha is called for you to be there, to be present to it. Vai translates as water for us. And in an island that's isolated, Wai, if you had water, you were considered to be one of the most richest persons because there was nobody else who could make it. It is a gift of the gods. And without water, life cannot go on. So if you were someone who had this kahawai, which is a stream, on your property, you were considered to be wealthy beyond words. And I, Hawaii, to be within. The richness of the life that's within the waters. And we were fortunate that we lived and continued to nurture our own. I love it. Marge, doesn't that bring back memories? Excuse us. Marge and I are Montessori teachers too. And working with little ones are just a part of our life. And with all these things in mind, it is important that I come to tell you about the things that make up the spirit of the people. The simple things that make up the spirit of the people. In telling the story, you heard in the background of the chanter's voice a percussion instrument. And that instrument is a hollowed out calabash called an ipu. It belongs to the squash family. And by the love of Marty and Linda Hagen, they brought it from Minnesota with them, because I didn't want to carry mine on board the flight. I'm going to give you a chance to listen to it. In hula, I've had countless people ask me, what's the meaning of this, and what are the hands meaning, what are the body meaning, what is this? Hula cannot be done without the spoken word. Again, hula cannot be done without the spoken word. That should ring very close to you, because gathering together as a worshiping community cannot be done without the spoken word of God. So in the same terms, that's where hula comes from. And because it has that exact same parallel meaning of a gathering, this is also into telling stories. So you hear the story according to Matthew, hula engenders the same thing. What I danced for you was the story of creation according to the people of a time long before any missionaries should have come to my land. There was a due respect given to this source of energy, source of light,
source of creation. And my people were simply saying, be aware of this, pay homage to it, and give it its due respect. Because of that, things like this were considered to be of great importance. And Ipu calls forth a command, and it's saying to all who are present, I call your attention. And the Lord be with you. And also with you. Same thing. Because the people of the islands of Hawaii were living in an isolated land, they had no idea of other things that were happening all around them, across the ocean. So to help their children remember things about life, they would do little things. Things to remind them that of the heavens are the birds that soar. Ilunga wa ilunga na manu o kaleva. Ilunga wa ilunga na manu o kaleva. These were implements that I found sitting on the seashore in the Bay of Hilo, Hawaii. Ilalola, ilalo, na pua o kahonua. The things found on this land, like the flowers that bloom. These implements come from the mountains. We call them kala'au, or the sticks of the trees. Ikai la ikai. Na ia o kamoana. At the oceans are found the fish of the sea. These are called pupu hinu hinu, seashells. These are considered to be implements of ancient Hawaii. The last of the implement was introduced into my islands for storytelling. It is called a pahu, and a pahu is a drum. And I was not able to bring that with me, and nobody from Minnesota bought one, so I decided to leave that out for now. That was introduced to my lands. It was not something that was of my land. And this is something that's really important for people to understand, that there are so many things that have happened to my islands, so many changes. We who are Polynesians are directly tied with groups like the Tahitians, the Marquesans, the Samoans. We're all Polynesians. We happen to live in a triangle. And the top of the triangle is the land called Hawaii. At the bottom, you'll discover Tahiti and New Zealand. And because of that great triangle mark there, there has been a continuous flow of migrations coming up and going back down. And in recent years, you've heard of a thing called the Hokulea, which is put together by the Bishop Museum as well as the Voyagers Society of Hawaii. And the reason for that voyage of a double-hull canoe was to prove to all minds that the people of Polynesia could travel over, I guess it's 2,000 miles to go from one end down to the bottom end, and to navigate purely by the stars and by the ocean swells. And we're fortunate that we have several people in our community at home who were paddlers on that double hull canoe. So it's been a real blessing for us to discover these things. Parts of the storytelling is also to tell you that before anyone came to the land of Hawaii, we were a people who learned to survive. And we had no other choice but to depend on one another. If we did not have that, we could not have this thing that we call ohana. And ohana, of the breath of life, there are many. When the first missionaries came to Hawaii, in storytelling, they had no understanding about the greeting that's done between people. I understand when I first came to the mainland USA, I was so accustomed to hugging, and suddenly I came to a place where they shook their hand. And I realized that that's where this special word, which translates as not having the breath of life, comes from. And to translate it, it means ha'aole. Ha'aole. Yes. And you have to understand that, because it is not meant as a derogatory remark. It is simply saying, this one doesn't share the breath of life. And the reason for it is this one wasn't taught how to share the breath of life. I say this because there are Hawaiians who I consider to be haole, because they do not share the breath of life. And there are people like Ken and Marge who I do not consider to be haole. They're just as kanaka makua, because they shared with our home. I mean, when Ken saw me the other day, he went, "Bruh, how are you?" And I went, "I'm fine." We do that with each other, because we've learned to play and to do things together. And with those things in mind, it's really important for you to know this. Somebody came up to me just the other day and said, what do you call people who come from the mainland? There's a name you call us. And I went, Howley? And she said, yeah. And I said, you have to understand what it really means. Not sharing the breath of life. That's where it comes from. And that's some more storytelling and why it was translated that way. The greeting for the Hawaiians is not a kiss. It is simply like the Eskimos. You put your nose next to each other, and then you take the breath of life together, and you go. My grandmother used to do that to me all the time. She'd say, "Honi ka'ua," and I'd go over to her, and she'd place her nose right on my forehead, and she'd go. And I'd say to her, "Why are you always smelling me?" You know? And I was still a child until the day when she said to me, "You have to know what this means. This is to share ha." And that means my blessing was always from her here. So when you find someone who didn't know that, they would just reach out and say hello. And you'd say, "Hello. It's okay. It's all right." But as people who become a part of the land of Hawaii, we had a couple who did music here the past week, Greg and his wife, and they just left this morning. And it was really nice for me to catch him in the bookstore to say goodbye, because he wanted to spend some time with me. He had spent a part of his college days in Hawaii. And what touched me the most is that he had a friend who was from the island. When he started to tell me the things that he did with this friend, I started to laugh. Things like grabbing your surfboard, jump in the back of a scooter, and go up into a sugarcane field to look for an irrigation ditch. To get into the irrigation ditch with your surfboard and then fish for fish. I was like, "You guys are screwy." But there was a storytelling that this friend of his knew where to find bass. And in Hawaii, to find freshwater fish, hello. And he knew where it was found, in the sugarcane fields. And that, I can tell you, is a story in itself. Those are important things. As I've been here in Holden, I've been listening to stories of people who have given their life to this village. People who enabled this to be what it is. And that is the storytelling. Rich. Because it touches all of you. You will all have a part in it. This land of Hawaii, it costs a lot to get there. And For that reason, when we see you arriving there, we know that you're there to have a good time. And after working with the tourists for several years, I realized that every time they left, I got more and more tired. And part of it was just that they were there for a good time. And at the end of their good time, I felt like I aged for all the days that they were there. So today I do a different kind of work. I'm still involved with people. Marge and I did Montessori. I did it after she came to work in the islands with her husband. And just before they left, Ken was going into Montessori teaching. That has been for me one of the most exciting things, working with children ages 2.5 to 6. To them, everything is storytelling. To them, everything is now. Because of that, I want to keep myself in tune with the time. If you have any questions, or if you have any thoughts, or if you have anything you'd like to ask about while I'm here, I thought about presenting a whole mess of things, and I said, I can't do everything in an hour. So I'd like to know what you would like to hear about. Yes?
Can I come hear the thing I want to hear?
You want to hear it? Okay. I need to do this. This is the chant that I danced. Aya opale havaiye te amai la imautale. What's normally done? Yeah.
I
want to
hear the rocks.
You want to hear the rocks? I love it. Are you going to be at Narnia tomorrow? I hope so. I'm going to work with several of the little ones. We'd like to do a thing like this for the Vespers. And we hope to do it for the children's Vespers. So if you're going to be here till at least Friday?
Thursday.
Thursday's the Vespers. We're going to do that with the children's Vespers. And if you're here till Friday evening, we're doing a celebration thing. And that's also going to incorporate hula and dance. And if you're here till Saturday, I'll catch the boat with you. I have to leave on Saturday too. I brought with me 5 or 6 sets of these. And then we went walking to the 10-mile waterfall. And Linda, Marty, and I were sitting there, and I looked down on the ground, and I saw all these rocks in your stream there. And I dug in, and I got some rocks from there to take home to show the kids what the ili'ilis here look like. These are called ili'ilis, and they just simply translate as talking stones.
It sounds like hand clapping.
It sounds like what clapping?
Hand clapping.
Hand clapping. Close. These, the kala'aus, these are the short ones. We also dance with one short one and one long one. And in the storytelling that incorporates those sticks, it tells about the battles that have taken place in Hawaii. And I have to tell you that hula was our only way of keeping events alive. It was our only way of dating what things took place in Hawaii for us. It's done in our mother tongue. It is probably one of the first things that the missionaries wanted to get rid of. They felt that anyone using a language that they were foreign to, dancing that looked lascivious to them, was just not proper. And this past few months, I was telling some women that I was working with in the kitchen. We were cleaning spinach leaves for tomorrow's lunch. And we were talking about things, and one of them said to me, you know, the missionaries that first came to Hawaii, they really did a trick on you people. And I said, yes, they did. And when Juanita pointed this out, I said to her, this past year, the diplomats from that church have sent out a letter of apology to the people of Hawaii, most especially to the people of Hawaiian ancestry. When they first came to Hawaii, it is true, what they saw there, they turned as being heathens, as being children who are not of God. And they had to come to teach us about God. And when this letter was put out, it was put out because they discovered over the 150 years that they had done an injustice to the people of Hawaii. And part of it is just that they had no idea what part of nature belonged to the people who lived there that was surrounded by all of nature. They couldn't understand that when we spoke of the goddess of fire, that it in fact spoke of that same God who created everything. And we were simply saying there was no way of naming these things. And there was no way of making them so personal to you. And that's what we're looking at. It is a way of saying the gods for the people of old Hawaii were personal gods. They lived with them. They were present in their daily life. Before a fisherman went out to cast his net, he would offer something to this god of the fish to say, "Be with me, take care of me, and while I'm out in the oceans, be ever at my side." And when the fishing was done and he came back in, he gave offering back to that god to say, "Thank you for keeping me safe, for enabling me to have the abundance of the water, and also for making me aware that I have to take care of this." That's one thing about the Hawaiians of the old. They were ecologists long before anyone came into the islands. They knew how to work with things and to keep them in balance. You didn't go to an area and fish out everything and desolate it. You never did that. You never went up to the mountains and cut trees down and desolate it. Never did that. There was a constant call to keeping all things in nature in balance. And some people are slowly learning it today. We're glad. I think it's really important. I'm really pleased that you have people who belong to this community that make you aware of that. They come to tell you that this is the only place you have to live. For us in Hawaii, we knew that centuries ago. We couldn't jump on a canoe and zip over in two hours and say, "Hi!" It didn't work that way. And because of that, we were very sensitive to those things. With the Western influence upon my people and the culture, more things have continued to change. Part of it is in the storytelling. There are stories that were told to enhance the appreciation for beauty is seen in the eye of the beholder. And in those stories, one story that I often remember when I first got to Hilo, and the story went something like this: when you're going up to the volcano, do not pick off the red blossom that grows on the trees as you're going up the hill. Because if you should do that, by the time you get to the volcano, it'll be completely covered in rain. And I was like, "Oh, really?" And the story goes like this. There was a young maiden named Lehua who lived in the forest of the island of Hawaii, in an area called Panaeva. Lehua, being noted for her beauty, was also being cursed by Pele because of her beauty. So Pele discovers that Lehua has a lover, and his name is Ohia. And Pele goes to Ohia and she says, "I'm here to claim you, that you will be my love." And he turned to her and he says, "My heart belongs to the one called Lehua." And with that, Pele in her anger turns him into an ugly, ugly, twisted tree. Lehua, meanwhile, comes looking for him. She calls to him, "Ohia, Ohia, Aia Ohia, where are you? Where are you, Ohia?" There is no answer. The wind just blows through the forest. And after several days of calling for him, she goes to the mountains and she cries to the gods and the goddesses of the cliffs. And they call back to her, "Lehua, the person you called Ohia is no longer the same. He has been turned into a tree." And she calls to them, she says, "God of the winds, God of the rain, goddess of all the things that lift to the heavens, help me turn this person back into the young man that I know." And they said, "We cannot. The one called Pele has changed him, and we are not able to change him back." She sits at the base of this tree and begins to weep. And after crying for several days, the gods and goddesses decide to turn her into a flower, and they place her on the bough of the tree. So today, when you go up, if you pick the flower from the branch, you're separating the two lovers. That's why it rains. And Ken and Marge knows how much it rains in Hilo.
Lots of people separating flowers.
Oh, yes, lots of people. Well, anyway. The tea leaf skirt that I wore, I would like to tell you, because it's found through all of the South Pacific. We used it for cooking. We used it for medicinal purposes. We use it for clothing. We also use it for creating slippers. And they are now using it for making leis. And I was taught to make a lei with it in a different fashion from the way it's being done today. And so I think on Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to do a lei making class. And it'll be made with flowers that belong to the state of Washington. I think they're status. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are many colors of status. I understood that if I hung them upside down, they would dry perfectly the way they were. But we had to cut them up in shorter pieces. But if you're present and would like to learn that, I'll be glad to teach you that. It'll be sometime on Wednesday or Thursday. Just look around the dining room area. You'll see a group of us doing crazy things there. Make yourself comfortable and come over. We are going to be using the tea leaf, that skirt. I will probably take it apart then and use it as the backing for the lei. And I'll show you what that looks like on that day. You have any other questions?
How do you preserve the skirt? And how old are those leaves?
Okay, this skirt I made, let's see. I flew out of Hawaii on Thursday, so I did it on Tuesday. The tea leaf skirt can last for as much as a month, or a month and a half. It depends on how you take care of it. When we were in Japan, I did several years entertaining there. We had people who sent us the leaves. It takes about 125 leaves to make a skirt, and it also goes just by your waistline. And my skirt was a lot smaller before I became who I am. And when I had to make this tea leaf skirt, it took me about 2 hours. In my younger days, it took me 45 minutes. Just, oh God. Yes.
Joe, is it really tea?
Is it what?
The tea leaves, are they really tea? I mean, I don't even know how tree tea grows.
Oh, it actually grows on a stalk.
I mean, is this like, is this drinking tea?
Oh, no, no, no.
Somebody just said it was T-I.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's T-I, not T-E-A.
Oh.
It's spelled T-I, not T-E-A.
Does it do anything with make skirts?
What's that?
Does the tea leaves or the tea tree do anything with make skirts? I
mean. Well, these we use for cooking with and medicinal purposes. When people were caught with high fevers, you take the leaf and debone the bat and place the leaf on their heads. It takes the heat off their body. Yeah. There are also things that were done with certain roots in the islands. There are a lot of herbs that come from plants that are found in Hawaii. And we have a Merino nun who happens to be an emergency room doctor. And when she had her medical class come to Hawaii for a reunion, we brought in someone who was very knowledgeable in the herbs. We call it kahuna lapa'au. And that is one who is aware of the things that are found in all the plants that grow on the island. And her son happens to be a cardiologist. Yeah.
Well, did they in the early culture have like medicine women or medicine men?
Yeah, it's good you should ask that. I have a book here, which is called Tales of the Night Rainbow. This book was written by the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren of a woman, pure Hawaiian, who was born before Kamehameha took over rule of all the islands, and she died after the last reigning queen. She lived for 116 years. She lived in the island of Molokai. This book was put out just a few years ago, and the knowledge that was preserved through the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of this woman is astounding. And also the spiritual values, because one thing with the Hawaiians, when it comes to healing, you would find the herbs to heal with. But before you did that physical healing, you had to do the spiritual healing too. So today, those kinds of things seem to still happen. Someone going into surgery, they will normally turn to somebody if the insides are not feeling at peace with things, for whatever reason. And sometimes it's the reason of how serious the operation is about to be and what things have happened in their life. But for Hawaiians, that was really important. If inside of you, your spirit was not at ease and something was coming up, you would have to put that spirit at ease before you go on to do anything. Again, the breath, ha. If that breath was not at ease, you could not go out with esteem, with confidence, to do the things you had to do. Nor could you possibly want to go into being helped physically if spiritually you were still not in line. So there were many women and men who practiced this thing of kahuna. And that simply means one who is gifted with knowledge. Does not mean one who's a witch doctor that can zap you to death. That only works on your psychology here. But we didn't have those kinds of things that ran rampant. We had a few of them who thought that they were so gifted that way that they could pray somebody to death. That was only if the person believed, and that was the key of it. If you did not believe that way, it couldn't touch you.
That term was kahuna, like the big kahunas. I mean, that's where that comes from.
Yeah, when you do. And you know, there are stories about kahunas that belong to specific islands who are very gifted, very talented. And they use their gifts sometimes to bewilder people. And so stories got to be bigger and bigger. And sometimes you try to figure out, now, where was the truth of all of this? You know, and we tried to keep them alive in the stories and the chants and the dances. That was really important. This book called The Tales of the Night Rainbow, in it, there are images that we used in our reconciliation. Hawaiians have a thing which is called ho'oponopono. And at a ho'oponopono, it happens usually once a year. And it is a time when you come together to release each other from anger, from any kind of hate, from any kind of feeling of being on the opposite side from the other. Especially when you were family. You had to take those times to come together to say what things irked you about each other and to put them at rest there. And once you put them at rest, you were told that this has just been removed. Oki, or clearly cut off. And oki means to remove the things that would keep us from living on. And ho'oponopono is a way of reconciliation for the old Hawaiians. In this book, there is an image which tells about a grandmother talking to a grandchild, and she says, when you were born like a bowl of light. And as you grew older, you would learn things that would become like stone, like rocks. Things like hate, greed, anger. And as you grew older, the more you'd learn about these things and the more you'd have them in you, they would enter your bowl of light. Light and stone cannot share the same space, for the stone will cover up the light, till one day your bowl becomes completely covered with rocks, and you become stone. And the question was, Grandma, how do I get rid of the stone? And the answer was, pick up your bowl and turn it upside down, and the rocks will fall away. We decided that image, that we are bowls of light, yesterday, Marge, when you said, to me, light is so positive. And it projects all the things that are in darkness are seen. And once you remove those things in darkness and bring the light, I always seem to feel like, I see you, I know you, aloha. And you come to know my light. When the rocks fall into our bowl, sometimes it keeps us away from ever trying to let the other really see us. We think sometimes the bowl is too heavy. But when I hear the image of simply turning the bowl upside down and the rocks fall away, we had our reconciliation service with our own people. And we had about 175 of them in our hall. And we had chairs of five in a circle, and the center chair simply had a crystal bowl, hand size. And we shared with them the understanding behind this. And it was really fascinating to see not just the young people, but the old people sit on the chair, pick up the bowl, and place their light into the bowl. And then to be in touch with the rocks that were there. Let the rocks fall into the bowl. And what was moving was to have them lifted above their heads and turn the bowl upside down. And the image that came from that was the fact that while they were holding the bowl, all the other people in the circle simply placed their hands on any parts of their body to pray for them. And once the bowl was lifted up and they turned it upside down, the others just removed their hands to let them release the stones. So some of these things from our storytelling continue to work just in who we are. I have 4:38, so without further ado, I would like to call Marty up here because he's going to help me with the next part of it. We are going to ask all of you, right where you are, to learn some gestures with us. It is also part of hula. And we created this for some piece of music that, a whole musical that Marty created several years ago. It's from a piece called Tales of Wonder. And in it, Marty wrote a piece of music for the community that I work for. And the name of the church is called Mary the Gate of Heaven. And in Hawaiian, it's Malia Puko Kalani. So you can say Mary the Gate of Heaven. It's easier. And nah, I love it, kid. And this piece of music, he translates as one ohana. And I spoke to you about ha being the breath of life. And being one of a family that are many. Okay. And the refrain says, all of creation, one ohana. All of creation sings in you. Many the voices, one great music, part of me. And simply reach over and grab the other person's hand and hold it and say, part of you. Okay? And very simple, we can try it together. It goes, all of creation, one ohana. All of creation sings in you. Many the voices, one great music, part of me and part of you. Is that right, Mark?
That's right.
I'm so glad. I've done it enough times. There are times when I don't know if I'm doing it. So I'm going to do it one time through.
And you want to do the verse? Then
you can do whatever.
You do the verse and I'll do the refrain.
Okay. Okay.
Here in the garden of creation, here is the home of life and love. Circled round by endless blessings, earth below and sky above. All creation
Marty also work. It's called All You Works of God. And this musical that he put together, we did it in Long Beach last year in June, right, Marty?
Yeah.
And then we did it in Hawaii last year in November. And then we did it here in Anaheim in January. And what I did when we did it in Hawaii, I have a friend of mine who has a dance company. And he had about 18 little girls who danced for him. They were all in grade school. And so I taught them this, All You Works of God. And they were really stoked by it. Because, well, one, in Hawaii, to have someone get up and dance hula in church, because the missionaries came in to say this is not acceptable, it was almost pushed throughout all churches. And I came from a family of entertainers. And, you know, my mother's side were Mormons on one end and Episcopalians on the other side, and my father was the minority, he was the only Catholic. And when we got together for family things, it was just natural for all of us to get up and sing and dance. And suddenly to walk into a setting of church that had nothing to do with that was like, oh, it's foreign. And oh, we must be the ones who are doing things that are not acceptable. And finally, last year I did a meeting for the Diocese of Hawaii. And at the meeting, I simply said to those who were very involved with the Catholic Church of Hawaii, as a child, I grew up in a church that said they did not believe that the God that they worshipped liked my people. And I drew out all the reasons for it, was that to walk into a Catholic church in Hawaii that had nothing that said we were in Hawaii, to be affiliated with a group of believers who looked at hula as being something unacceptable in worship, for me was kind of like, that's where I learned my worship, in hula. I learned what was beauty to be shared. I learned what was the word of God present and alive for the people that I came from. And so to make that something important, I just decided, watch folks, we're gonna do hula, but this hula is gonna be real different. And with that, we gathered these young ones, and when we told them where they were going to do it at, they were like, are you sure? And I said, yeah, you know, it's okay. And they all came from a dance company. And when we started doing it, they were kind of unreserved because they didn't know how they would be received by people who were there for a worshiping gathering. And when Marty got through it, I said, no, we'll do it anyway. And if anybody has a problem with it, I'm not worried about it. I am from that land. All who have come there are guests. And if they have not been taught properly that as guests, they're asked to join in, that's okay. They can be how holy. And with that, we'd like to share this All You Works of God. And it's simply, all you works of God, every mountain, star, and tree, bless the one who shapes your beauty, who has called you all to be one great song of love and grace, ever ancient, ever new. Raise your voices, all you works of God. Simple gestures that way. Don't have to worry about feet movements, just hands. Begins with... all you works, it's you. You're all the works of God. So you can go, all you works of God, every mountain, star, and tree, bless the one who shares your beauty, who has called you all to be one great song of love and grace, ever ancient, ever new. Raise your voices, all the works of God. Okay? Try it.
Can I just say, this song was written 4 years ago here at Holden. And it was dedicated to Terry Tafoya, a Native American chanter, who I heard give a talk right here. And I was struck by the similarities between Native American spirituality and Hawaiian spirituality. Just as a side note.
Star and tree, bless the one. ever.